Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. I think the Senate showed us yesterday. I think they really showed us who matters in this country more than anything. And it ain't us. Look how quickly and in a bipartisan fashion, the U.S. Senate moved to pass the Supreme Court Police Parity Act. Because, hey, there was somebody outside of Brett Kavanaugh's house. And look, I had a couple people, you know, email me and go, yeah, you know, we passed this law to protect Brett Kavanaugh and his family and all this stuff. But what about Christine Blasey Ford? Do you remember her? Do you remember the fact that she was basically in hiding for months because crazy right wingers were literally threatening her? Now, the people out in front of Kavanaugh's house, they had cute little signs and they were... The images that I saw, non-threatening, nothing threatening there. In fact, you know, Susan Collins in Maine called the police because somebody wrote chalk, said, Susie, please pass the Women's Protection Health Act. Please do that. Mainers, you know, want choice. She thought that was a threat. Called the police. The police said, no, not a threat. But they did call out the Public Works Department to clean it off her sidewalk because, hey, she can't wait for it to rain. She can't wait for it to go out. No, it has to go immediately because it threatens her. I mean, this is remarkable to me. And look, I still don't know if Samuel Alito is in hiding or not, or if that was just some kind of ridiculous rumor. I don't know if they took Alito and his family into the secret bunker or whatever, but you know, it's amazing how quickly they move for our elite. But for average working people, wow, we can't get anything passed. And they did this, you know, what was that, on a voice vote? I mean, it was up and down. It was quick. You know, imagine if we could, pass a minimum wage increase that quickly because workers need it. Imagine if we could, get a bill pushed through that would make drug prices lower so that seniors, especially who take these prescription drugs, wouldn't have to decide between, you know, food and drugs. You know, what if we had, you know, a Senate that, was somewhat functional. We could do something around student debt. We could do something around medical debt. We could do something around infrastructure. We could do lots of things with a functional Senate. We could do a bunch of things with a government that would react and be there to do their jobs. This is why, again, voting is a participatory sport. Why we need people who are active and engaged and throwing bums out who do not vote the right way. And look, we saw it today. Again, another one of these moments, a 49-51 vote as all of the Democrats sans Joe Manchin voted for the piece of legislation that would have codified Roe into law. The right to an abortion would have been in the law. Oh, no, Joe Manchin said it goes too far. Joe Manchin, no. No. Too broad to get his vote. No, bad. He said, I would vote for a Roe versus Wade codification if it was today. I was hopeful that, but I found out yesterday in caucus that it wasn't going to be. So, no. Also, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, two of the Republican senators who supposedly are against restrictions on abortion, are supposedly the champions of women's rights, supposedly on the right side of the issue, they voted with all the Republicans. And not surprising, because look, you know, Susan Collins especially, she's been full of you-know-what for such a long time. And I blame the both of them for the mess we're in this moment, because you put three extremist judges on the court. These were far-out extremist judges. These are what my conservative friends used to call activist judges. And to have someone like Susan Collins say, no, I looked into their soul. She didn't actually say that. That was George W. Bush. But I'm stealing that for her. Because she claimed that they told her, no, they wouldn't do that. And yet here we are. Here we are in this moment where the reality is what it is. And all of us who were paying attention knew that this is where we would be, in a place where about 64 million women of reproductive age who live in this country are going to lose that choice. And the thing is that, you know, the majority of people in this country, and by a big number, when you're looking at almost two-thirds of the country saying, no, it should be safe and legal, there's kind of a problem here. Because the mass of we the people are saying one thing, yet our folks in the robes, our elite in Washington are saying, no. Now, Ron Johnson, the senator from Wisconsin, I think his was an interesting position. He said, you know, it might be a little messy for some people, but abortion's not going away. You can just go to another state. People in Wisconsin, you can just drive to Illinois, where it, for the time being, may be legal until crazy people take over there like they did in Wisconsin. Because, look, in my lifetime, I never thought Wisconsin would lose their minds. I never thought the forward state would be the backward state. So listen, my friends and listeners in Madison and Milwaukee, Waukesha, throughout our listening area and the stations we're on there, can you make sure this comes up to Ron Johnson? Because he doesn't believe this is going to come up on the campaign trail. He said it. He goes, no, it's going to come up. Not going to come up on the trail. It's a non-issue. Can we make sure that he knows that this is actually an issue? And listening to some of these Republicans, it's kind of, again, not sure where they're getting their talking points. I point to Montana Senator Steve Daines, who was speaking on the floor of the Senate on Tuesday and went on some weird kind of rant about sea turtles. Something about eggs and not the hatchlings, no, but eggs, and how you can't destroy the eggs under penalty of law, and how, you know, why we place, you know, protections on eggs of sea turtles and eagles. And it got me thinking, you know, because, you know, he was going on, you know, we don't let them kill the eggs of eagles. Yeah, because, you know, hopefully there aren't people going around, you know, kicking and stomping on women in the middle of the streets. Now, understand, you know, the eagles and the sea turtles and all of those things are on the endangered species list, and he knows this. We are not. Although if we don't do much on climate change, who knows at this point. But, you know, he's going down this path. And it got me thinking, again, you know, as we've been talking about, the right eventually wants to come after, I believe, all of the progress of the 20th century and contraception being part of it. So the argument he's making is every egg is sacred. And, you know, I've said, look, there's going to be a point, and guys, this is why you should care. This is why you should care. especially you teenage boys. This is why you should care. The old Monty Python, every sperm is sacred. This is leading us down this path. Evidently, if I'm getting Steve Daines, the senator from Montana's argument correctly, you know, because we place laws to protect the eggs of sea turtles and the eggs of eagles, we should do that as well for women. So every one of those eggs must be protected. And at some point, those things that fertilize those eggs, those must be protected as well. Must not spill the seed. So, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, teenage boys better be worrying about. Now, how far will they go? Yeah. Obviously, I don't think, at least I hope that's not what's in his head. But this is where the arguments that they're making. And you look at, you know, now South Carolina, they're considering new restrictions on abortion. You're going to see this in every Republican state. You're going to see this. And like I said, now it's, you know, we're coming after the women folk. Who's next? Who's next? Now, again, I go back to where I started with this. Look how quickly they were able to move to protect our elite justices. Even though there was no danger for them whatsoever. You know, Ted Cruz looked at January 6th and, you know, said that, you know, it was just people peacefully protesting. Yet he looked at what happened out in front of Brett Kavanaugh's house, and these pro-choice protesters embracing mob violence to get their partisan outcome. And yet there are people sitting on lawn chairs with coolers. You know, with a sign that says repo freedom for all. You know, there were no flags being stabbed into policemen's stomachs. There were no bear spray being sprayed into policemen's face. There was no one being crushed. There were people just kind of hanging out, chanting. And I don't even think there wasn't even sidewalk chalk at Brett Kavanaugh's house. So you can't even go that they were defacing the sidewalk. But according to the right, you know, any peaceful protest now is going to be mob violence. And you go, but it's our right to redress our government of grievances. Oh, evidently not now. Evidently no more. Evidently that's not going to happen. So I'd love to hear your thoughts. Give me a call, 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. If you want to weigh in, is it amazing how quickly they can operate when they really want to, when they've got something on their minds? Give me a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. Going to take a quick break. Remember, if you're just joining us or you miss any of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Take the program on the go wherever you go. Back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So So, you know, again, this is a hot topic, and I want to jump right into it. Let's get Kathy on line one. Kathy, how are we doing?
Oh, good. How are you doing?
Not too bad. What's on your mind?
I read them Newsmax scrolls, and they had on there about the Deutsche Bank and fraud case with Trump about the FBI informant turning up dead.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I take nothing that Newsmax puts out as reality, but I'll have to check into it. I haven't seen that. I don't pay attention to Newsmax. Sorry.
Okay. Oh, and do you think that if these churches that are pushing these 13 and 11-year-old girls to have babies, do you think that they would allow them to stay in their congregation?
That's a good question. The answer is I don't think so. I think they would, actually, if they were married to the minister. Because if you look at what's going on,
in Tennessee, they changed their laws
so that the minister can say it's okay. So I'm thinking yes. I'm going to go with yes. They would be okay with it.
Yep. Okay, hon. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate it. It is what it is, you know. Let's get Jim on line two. Jim, how are you today? Jim, you there? I guess I lost Jim. Alice, let's go to you. Are you there?
How are you today?
I'm good.
I'm here.
Okay, speak.
The only thing I want to say is, I guess this original intent thing doesn't count.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to redressing the wrongs and whatnot. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, yeah.
Throw the entire Constitution out.
To the wind.
Yep. I guess we're going to just have to rewrite it. Oh, well.
Yeah, don't give them any ideas because they'll rewrite it much worse.
Yes. Have a good one.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. Now we're going to go to Jim on line one. Jim, how are we doing tonight?
Good, Rick. How about you?
Oh, I can't complain.
Hey, just a quick comment about a lot of things he's been talking about on our show of late. You know, I'm a 73-year-old guy. I came of age in the 1960s. I've seen a lot. I've seen a lot of hate. I've seen a lot of greed. I've seen a lot of racism. I've seen just a lot of mean, nasty stuff from a lot of people. And I've seen so much, and yet I still feel deep down inside that I know too little. But yet I do know this much. If these people in 2022 or 2024, the Trumps and the DeSantises, if these charlatans take over, they're going to put us in the Wayback Machine, and they're going to take us back to a time far, far away. I'd like to hope that we can move forward to a fairer and more enlightened society. I don't have a lot of faith, though, these days in American society either. I leave you with this one thought. In 1961, Nikita Khrushchev, who was the premier of Soviet Union Russia back in the day, they used to call him their premier. I will quote, "We do not have to destroy America with missiles. America will destroy itself."
Absolutely.
From within.
No, I've heard that, you know, for years. But this is where I think, you know, people of your knowledge and your age and your experience are vital to explaining what things used to be like and explaining how bad things were and where they want to take us back to and why returning to the bad old days is not going to make us great. Jim, I appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much. No, this is one of those things I think is so important. And I think Jim is spot on in where his thinking is. And I've been saying this myself for a while. We're in this moment where, I haven't seen people so angry and so pointed at each other and in my entire lifetime. And this is by design. you know, this didn't just happen. The moneyed interest of this country, this is what they want. This is how they get what they want, what they need. This is how they get it, by keeping us pitted against each other so that we never look towards them. And this is the frustrating part of where we are, because, you know, we can do incredible things. We can be a great country. And there's no one on any side of the political divide who doesn't want this to be a great country. No one. But I look at, you know, the MAGA folks who are leaning into Biden's push against the ultra MAGA folk, the people who want to pursue the conservative agenda of destroying government, dragging it in the bathtub and drowning it, destroying Medicare and Social Security and the ACA, and you know, deregulating everything so that we have no ability to protect ourselves, our workers, our consumers, whatever. A Supreme Court that is really radical. We are in a moment where our government is in the hands of radicals. And it is really because they figured out the fault lines. And, you know, as Jim pointed out, you know, Khrushchev was right. We would fall from within because we do have dividing lines. We do have things that separate us. And as I said the other day, the only way we can go forward, the only way we can get things done, the only way we can make this country great is if we're willing to hold hands with, or stand shoulder to shoulder with, or stand in solidarity with people we don't necessarily like, we don't necessarily agree with, but we all want to go in the same kind of direction. And this is, I know, it's radical, I know, but it's something that we have to figure out how to do. And I go back to, you know, election night 2020. My mind is, we do it through economic fights. We make people's lives better economically. The one area that the wealth class has benefited through all this division is they've taken all the money. And part of what is making people angrier and angrier is that they're struggling. For me, on election night 2020, I cast my ballot. I was out on a picket line. I was leading a strike of, you know, 55 striking workers who, 3/4 of them voted for Trump. But they were fighting the righteous fight of better wages, hours, conditions. They were fighting the righteous fight of making their lives better and their coworkers' lives better and their communities better against a big multinational corporation and demanding that they be respected. That's the fight. That's where we have to figure, for me, that's the first part of this. That's where we come back together in the middle of the street. And then we have those other conversations. And look, we may not always agree. I don't always agree. I don't agree with myself 100% of the time. But we got to start somewhere. And for me, that's where it is. It comes down to, it's the economy, stupid. It's always been the economy. And the wealth class understands that better than anybody. And they keep throwing the outrage candy out, and they keep funding their chaos merchants to keep shoving that down our throats. So that, again, we don't realize that they've robbed us to the tune of about $2 trillion a year for the last 30, 40 years. Time to wake up. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about a little bit about inflation. I know it's a big thing. I know it's hitting everybody. Right back after this. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, California Congresswoman Katy Perry, Katy Porter. I don't know why I get her the Katy Perry there, but Katy Porter. Talking to Democrats, she shocked the cost of bacon, $9.99. Actually took it out of her cart, put it back. And this is one of these things where, you know, our representatives, the elite, the folks that, we look to for help, sometimes we don't know if they understand what the average working stiff's going through. And by her having this this conversation with the House Democratic Caucus and kind of explaining why inflation and how this is hurting is important, I think kind of maybe pushed a little bit, maybe the president, you know, talking about why this is important, maybe going to get a little more sense of urgency that we haven't seen from Democrats. I'm hoping. We'll see. But here to share some thoughts on the inflation issue, on the president's speech yesterday, and maybe some solutions on where things should go, I've asked Andrew Stettner to come talk with us. Andrew is a senior fellow over at the Century Foundation. Andrew, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I'm looking at this Katie Porter, you know, statement. You know, hey, I went to put this pound of bacon in my cart. It was $10. End up putting it back. This is real. This is hurting people. You know, even someone like her.
You know, inflation is a real issue, and progressives, you know, at our peril will, you know, minimize it when prices are rising faster than people's wages. It's an anxious feeling, and it's even harder for those of us living on fixed incomes. So it's something that we have to have solutions. One thing you heard from the president, though, all conservatives are doing is complaining.
Right.
You know, they don't have solutions. You know, you've seen the president release the oil from the Strategic Oil Reserve. You've seen gas prices cool down. After that, you see him jawboning and taking on beef producers for their profit hoarding and mongering. And you saw beef prices cool a bit in December. So I really think they have been doing things and to be more voluble about it. You know, and, you know, still recognize that, you know, this inflation is happening across the world. Every industrialized country is experiencing it. The main reason is really COVID, what it did to our economy and our ability to get goods to consumers in a timely fashion. And when there's people with money chasing few goods, you know, the prices go up. So it's not something that we, you know, that should be put on, you know, any, you know, particular politician's, you know, foot. It really is something that is a result directly of, you know, the unique impact that COVID has had on the economy. I've said a thousand times, what this economy is going to get straightened out is when the COVID situation gets straightened out. And we still have China shutting down huge parts of its country. And that's where, you know, a huge share of the goods you and I buy come from. So we're not out of that yet, and we're not going to be out of inflation until we're out of that.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and I would have liked to have seen the president come out and say that, you know, we're in a moment of opportunity. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more positive tone to go, look, you know, the reality is you're right. COVID did this. We need to adjust our supply chains. We need to reshore manufacturing. We need to, you know, bring jobs back. We need to have domestic production for domestic consumption so that we're never in this vulnerable position again. I look at this as an opportunity to reshape our economy, to reshape the global economy. I think that would sell a little bit better than, well, it's not my fault. It's over there. I'm curious how you react to that.
The hardest thing that we have to, and it's hard for, you know, us as progressives and, you know, working people, is that there's some limits to what Congress can do. You know, at this stage, although the factors are exogenous to policymakers, you know, with COVID, the tools that we have really are, you know, for interest rates, you know, to rise. And to, you know, you had Jerome Powell saying he is going to raise interest rates, but he wants to keep unemployment low. It's not Paul Volcker. He's not someone trying to bring our economy into a recession. You and I are old enough to remember that. That's not what he's trying to do. And that is going to take time, and it is something that is a bit out of the hands of people in Congress, because Congress doesn't control the Fed, it shouldn't. And that's the way it was put into place. So there is some limits there, but I agree with you 100%. We should be talking about one reason we have you know, such high inflation. Let's take computer chips. You know, GM used to have its own semiconductor computer chip foundry. It was sold off, and then it was overseas. And now, you know, GM can't get enough computer chips, and the price of cars, you know, went through the roof. And we are seeing that. We're seeing the Intel create a huge new semiconductor plant in Ohio that Sherrod Brown was at. The CHIPS Act, which we're advocating for, would increase funding for more semiconductor production in the United States. Having greater sources of U.S. manufacturing, it is a tool to reduce the risk of inflation. It's not going to turn it around tomorrow, but it's the direction we should be taking our economy.
No, I agree. And this is where I think, you know, using that example, we should be doing on a lot of fronts. You know, baby formula. The big complaint is there aren't enough baby formula to go around. Why are we getting baby formula from China? Why do we have to do that? Why can't we produce that here? You know, diapers. Why are there only two companies that make this? There are so many things policy-wise I think we could be doing to say, look, we're doing something. This is the direction we're going to be moving. I think we have to break up a lot of these big consolidated corporations. Where is this generation's trust busters? You know, we're told that, you know, competition's supposed to be the way that the market works, yet there isn't a lot of that going on. When you look at, you know, meat producers, there's a handful of them. You look at the gas companies, a handful of them. It's no wonder we're seeing some of these corporate calls where they're going, yeah, you know, we're gonna cash in this moment, Andrew. I mean, because I think a lot of this, and maybe you correct me if you think I'm wrong, I think a lot of this is just good old-fashioned American greed, good old-fashioned American opportunism. They're, you know, everyone thinks inflation's going up, so we're going to jump in and grab our little piece of it.
Well, what's really happening, you know, because there's such corporate power and corporate concentration, it is the big companies that are taking the biggest share of this heating up economy. You know, it's not going to wages. The biggest, you know, place it's going is into corporate profits. So they have the power and they're taking advantage of it. And workers, you know, are not, you know, we've seen some, you know, great union effort, some recovery of wages, but wages are not where this economic growth is going. It's going to corporate profits. And then you have, you know, the prices of inputs, you know, that's real. You know, the prices of inputs into goods, you know, have gone up, but there has been this incredible, you know, rise in profits, and corporations have had increasing amounts of power for decades. You know, through the last, you know, 20 years, they used that power to keep down wages so they could have, you know, good profits. And now what they're doing is, you know, when they can take it, they're maximizing the amount of profits, you know, that can take it. You know, the Economic Policy Institute, and that support this, has called for a tax on excess profits, as has Bernie Sanders. You know, that being some way to say, well, let's, you know, take some incentive away from companies, you know, to take such large, you know, profits at this moment.
And again, this is the kind of stuff that I think is really important for consumers, for taxpayers to see, you know, especially when a company is talking about doing stock buybacks, which I think is one of the most non-productive ways to use tax dollars, when you're giving these huge corporations all these tax breaks. And they're literally telling us, you've given us all this money. We have no idea what to do with it. We have no productive use for this money that you've allowed us to keep. So we're just gonna buy our stock back and enrich ourselves. Ah, the heck with the economy, the heck with our workers. That just seems to me like a ripe moment for congressional action, for the president to get out and say, this is where we need to be going.
You know, absolutely. You know, it's all, you know, there are some, you know, I think it's just important, you know, also in terms of our messaging, you know, where do we see, you know, the places where government could help with prices, the prices of prescription drugs, the prices of childcare? These are real ways that Americans' pocketbooks are being hit. And it is progressives that have solutions to those problems. So there, you know, Biden cannot wave a magic wand. Even the ideas, you know, we've talked about, you know, won't bring down inflation, you know, before the midterm elections. and they may not on their own bring down inflation even by the time that Biden is up for reelection. You know, that really is a piece that's going to be in monetary policy. But there are things we can do and send a message that progressives care about these high prices that are hitting Americans, and we want to do something about it. How about prescription drugs? There's a whole bunch of prescription drugs, cheap, right over the border in Canada. If we could import them, that would help seniors who are facing the increase in prices because their income is fixed. You know, so there's a lot of examples there that we can do about how that we are the ones that care about prices, and we are going to do something about it, not just whine about it and say, deride the president and his leadership. You know, this the goal coming out of this COVID crisis, first and foremost, was getting people back to work. And we have had the fastest jobs recovery of any economic cycle in decades. We went from, three jobless recoveries to by the end of this year that we will have recovered, more than 20 million jobs that were lost, something that was not saw as possible. The Congressional Budget Office for this year, was estimating we'd have 7 or 8% unemployment rate. And we're down to a record low unemployment rate. So that's what we wanted to achieve. So we've achieved that. Now it is really, up to, the Fed to help us, bring this economy into balance in the face of what was an unexpectedly long and difficult overhang of COVID in terms of what it did to supply chains, from the ports to, to semiconductors. We can bring this economy into balance. So we did the right thing by getting Americans back to work. What would hurt the most if you were dealing with inflation is if you didn't have a job.
No, you're absolutely right. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Andrew Stettner. Andrew is the senior fellow over at the Century Foundation. You want to check out their site, tcf.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can check out the work that they do there. And you said that the job part of it is really important. And more important than that are the wages that those jobs pay. And I go back to my grandparents' generation. And, I remember my grandparents, and I've talked about this, several times, during that stagflation period of the 70s, where inflation was running rampant, their union contracts had cost of living adjustments in those contracts so that their wages didn't get eaten away by inflation. So it didn't really hurt them as much. This is where I'm a big supporter of people joining and forming unions and having contracts that protect people in these moments. Because if we had, 30% union density in this country, like we had back when my grandparents were working, I don't think this would be as painful as it is right now. I think it would be different. Curious your thoughts.
No, I think, for sure, the decrease in union density, decrease in worker power means it's corporations that are taking advantage, of this moment. And even at a moment, workers have more leverage in the economy than they've had. Unemployment rate is so low, record numbers of job openings so people can jump a job, and get an increase. We're not seeing the kind of wage growth that you would expect in this moment. And it's also another thing, the way economists, look at that. That's also an idea that this is not some place where, the economy got overheated. We put too much money into workers' hands. We put just money into the economy and that it got overheated. Because if that was the case, you really would see wages increasing, on an economic basis. So we haven't had that kind of overheating. And that's one reason, that, wages haven't gone up. But, workers aren't taking it quietly. You've seen different kinds of workers, organize, on their own. From Starbucks to Amazon, to get decent wages and fair working conditions. So yeah, this is a moment. This can be the year of the worker, the year that the workers, rise up and say, hey, we want to be treated fairly. We want to have decent wages on healthcare benefits and retirement in the face of an economy that is, topsy-turvy in the result of COVID.
So just to be clear, and I want to make sure crystal clear, it's, the reason for the inflation is not the $1,400 that we got because of the rescue plan. It's not the $1,400 because I got conservative friends, Andrew, who are telling me, you know, Joe Biden gave everyone $1,400 and that's the reason for this, because people went out and they were reckless with that money that they were given. And that's what caused this. So you're saying it wasn't that.
You know, if that was the case, the countries that didn't give the $1,400, you know, would not also be experiencing inflation. You are seeing this inflation across the world. And these are, you know, blips in the face of what COVID has done, you know, to the world economy and the Ukraine war. You know, these are the driving, you know, forces of inflation. You know, my view is this has been driven primarily by the shortage of goods, increase in demand. Was every part of the economic policy perfect? No, it wasn't all perfect. You know, there were some things that maybe we could have done differently, but we didn't know what we had in front of us. You know, in 2021, in 2020, you know, we were looking at the next Great Depression, and we acted, you know, ferociously and effectively in a place where people's, you know, balance sheets, the unemployed, you know, they didn't, you know, lose their homes. They didn't lose all their life savings because we insulated them against it. So I see that as a success.
I agree.
You know, not as something that is a failure or a wrongheaded policy decision.
Now, I guess it depends on which side of that you're on. I mean, there are some people who would have liked to have seen what happened in 2008 and 2009, where millions of people did lose their homes, and they were able to claw that back and make huge profits off of it, while the working class struggled and suffered. And I'm glad we didn't see that this time at the rates that I expected. So you're right. Last question I've got for you. You know, clearly people are wanting to see an end. Are we seeing the worst of it? Was March the worst month, as some economists are saying? Is that going to be the peak? Do you see a downward, or we still don't know, because we still don't know where COVID's going to go in the fall? What are you thinking?
I still think there's some uncertainty. I think there's a chance, you know, that we've achieved peak inflation. Today's figures, the core inflation, that's without food and energy, in fact, did pick up, as you saw, you know, some services like transportation. I'm talking about airplanes and, you know, and rent, you know, increase. So we're not sure if we're out of the woods. There's too much unpredictability, you know, in the economy. When we're talking about COVID, it's not so much an impact here, but it's really what's happening in China and, the Ukraine war. So we need these exogenous factors, and we need what the Fed is doing, you know, which is to gradually raise interest rates. That will cut off some of the speculation, you know, and come the over, you know, the fast rise in housing prices. You know, raising in interest rates, you know, moderately will cut down on some of those price pressures, but that's not going to happen overnight. So I think we are, you know, we shouldn't be overconfident. We've made that mistake a lot. You know, this is going to be transitory. It's only going to be a few months. It's only 6 months, you know, but I do think that this Federal Reserve Bank and this administration, you know, they have the right tools and the right approach to bring inflation under control, you know, over the next, you know, period, the next 1 to 2 year period, you know, without forcing us into another recession.
Andrew, I appreciate the thoughts and the time. I hope you'll come back and share some more with us as this continues, because I personally don't see it going away anytime soon. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
Andrew Stettner, he is the senior fellow over there at the Century Foundation. Make sure you check out their website, tcf.org, the Century Foundation's website. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1894. That was the first day of the Pullman strike. The strike started in the company town of Pullman, on the south side of Chicago, where workers made luxury sleeping cars for passenger trains.
As a depression swept the nation, workers had seen their wages slashed. But rents, owned to the company owner George Pullman, stayed the same. The strike won support from the American Railway Union and its leader, Eugene V. Debs. The American Railway Union called for a boycott of all Pullman cars. And more than a quarter of a million railway workers participated in the work action against Pullman. The strike was crushed by legal injunctions and with federal troops. In a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court, Eugene V. Debs was imprisoned for his support of the boycott. One prominent supporter of the strike was Chicago area Reverend William H. Cardewine. The Reverend supported the strikers from his pulpit. After the strike, his book, The Pullman Strike, helped spread the word of Pullman. In it, he warned, "We as a nation are dividing ourselves, like ancient Rome, into two classes, the rich and the poor, the oppressor and the oppressed. On the side of the oppressor, there is power and protection, class legislation, and military support. We are following in the tracks of ancient Rome," he wrote, "instead of learning lessons from her failures and defeats. No country can prosper, no government long perpetuate itself and its institutions, which does not administer judgment and justice alike to all its people." These words from Reverend Cardewine seem more relevant than ever today. Will we heed his warning?
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, Andrew brought up Amazon and Starbucks, and yesterday, the NLRB asked the federal court for an immediate injunction to reinstate seven pro-union baristas at a Memphis, Tennessee Starbucks who Starbucks fired. This is a worker-centric, worker-friendly NLRB saying, look, you know, you can't go firing people for union organizing. It is against the law. And look, this shows that, you know, the NLRB has gotten a lot more aggressive in fighting against these companies who do illegal things. And, you know, most union busters will tell you, you know, it's in your best interest to fire somebody. Go on, fire somebody, because there aren't any really real penalties. So it's in your best interest. Fire somebody. It puts a chilling effect across the entire workforce. And, you know, if you do have to bring them back, I'll slap on the wrist, promise not to do it again, maybe have to post the dreaded I won't do it again notice. But now that you've got an NLRB going, no, we're going to be a little bit more proactive. We're going to be pushing. This stuff doesn't take years because those seven workers were just fired not too, you know, a couple of weeks ago. They're now pushing to get them back. Today, you had two more stores in Santa Cruz, California, that voted to unionize at Starbucks. One voted 15-2, one voted 14-1, continuing their roll of victories and by wide margins. So it's showing that the union busting campaign and all of the money that they're wasting on union busters, not really working. Now think about it, you know, just in, you know, since what, last December, the Starbucks workers union has gone from one store unionizing to now 64. They now represent more than 1,500 workers, and there are another 250 stores that have petitioned for NLRB elections. So this snowball, this steamroller going right down the hill, so to speak, all the while you have the NLRB filing, you know, a huge number of unfair labor practices. In fact, I saw a story that said, you know, the last filings, like 126 unfair labor practices against them. This is kind of a big deal. And now you find out that 14 Senate Democrats have sent a letter to the old new CEO, the new old new Howard Schultz. They brought him back out of retirement. The Starbucks CEO demanding that the company recognize the Starbucks Workers United Union. and to sit down and actually negotiate a contract. Those senators would be Sherrod Brown, who I am hoping runs for president in 2024. Both senators from Massachusetts, Markey and Warren. Both senators from Minnesota. Good on you, Minnesota. Tina Smith and Amy Klobuchar. Booker from New Jersey. Sanders from Vermont. Blumenthal from Connecticut. Gildebrand from New York. Markley from Oregon. Van Hollen from Maryland. Padilla from California. Hirono from Hawaii, and my senator, Bob Casey, from Pennsylvania. Where are the rest of the other senators jumping in on this, saying, hey, Starbucks, do the right thing. Honor your workers. Sit down, negotiate. Because you know how the most prosperous working class in the history of the country was built? You know how the middle class was built? You know how America was built? It was built on the backs of union workers. Do the right thing. And I agree. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. For those of you who only get the first hour, make sure you get the podcast. Everyone else, back after this.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.